Tell me about Jimmy Rivera when you were coaching.
Jimmy Rivera, he's another one of the characters. You've got a lot of characters on that in your list there. But he was an outfielder that was erratic, outfielder, but had good ability. At times he'd be the best ball player in the ballpark. Other times he'd be the worst ball player in the ballpark. He just was no consistency. And he had the unfortunate thing happened to him that he was in jail. He was in the Army. And he said that, he told me, and I was there. And he said, I said, well, how'd you get, and he said, well, they accused him of making passes at a sergeant's daughter or something. And he took the, evidently he took the blame for some other guy that they were probably just, maybe, I don't know the exact story that he did. He said it was, he didn't, it was nothing that happened, but then he was accused of it, and he had, and when you're in the Army, and you're, they say you've been, you're in the brig. Mm-hmm. And so, that's why he was in, it didn't hurt him mentally as well as bad as did some other people, because he was willing to talk about it. You know, he said, yeah, I was in drink, but I'm out now, and I served my time, you know what? And he brushed it off like that. He did it. Mentally, he did a good job. I asked him one time, I said, you ever get in trouble? And I said, yeah. He said one time, that he was in charge of a baker, I think he was a baker or something. And he said they had these big ovens that, you know, you put bread in, and they always turn around like this, and then like this, and I said, one of the guys, there's a bunch of them. He said one of them stole some meat, some steaks out of the kitchen. He said, we're going to eat the kitchen. He said, I put them in this big oven, and this bread was coming around, you know, like this. And he said, you could smell those things. Along came a sergeant, officer. He said, what do I smell? He said, I don't know. He said, but about that time, these steaks showed up. Seven of them. And so they started. Who stole those steaks? He said, I did. I got them all. He said, who's going to? He said, no. He said, they're all for me. He wouldn't lie. He wouldn't lie to on the other guys. The other guys who were in, he's going to take the blame for it. And he said, well, if they're all for you, I want to see you eat them all. He said, sit down there. He said, I got four of them down, but that's all I can do. And he said, and then they put me in solitary confinement for 2 weeks. With nothing to eat, he said. So that tells Jimmy's story. Mm-hmm. He was erratic. He, like I said, he could make good plays, he could make bad plays, but he was always upbeat. And everybody accepted Jim. Like, some days you wanted to kill him, other days you wanted to love him to death. Mm-hmm. And he was just that kind of a guy. He would harm no. I don't think he'd harm a flea on your back if he really. But he just. Is one of those guys that it was his character. He accepted and stuff like that. I know Lopez, sometimes he'd make a bad throw. He'd throw, for instance, a fly ball to the outfield and run around third base. He'd go throw the man out of play. Maybe sometimes he'd throw it in the stands. Next time he'd make a perfect throw to the plate. So you just had to accept Jimmy Rivera as Jimmy Rivera and love him and let him go.
I guess he made some comments to Bess Truman.
Oh, yes.
And then I guess he also made some comments to JFK.
Yeah. Well, Bess Truman, we was up in Kansas City, and Truman used to come to the ball game all the time there at the old Blues Park. Yeah. And so he would go out, of course, and they'd keep him in the office, he and Bess. Really, Bess was a good baseball fan. She really loved baseball. She was more than Harry. And so they'd keep him in there, you know, crowd now. So one day after the game, we was all dressed and going out to get on the bus. And here Truman and Bess came out to get in there. He walked up and said, hi, Bess. How you like the way I played today? She said, fine, Jim, fine.
I guess he said something about too bad your team lost or
something. too bad we beat them. Yeah. Jim had a good day. Too bad your team lost.
I guess with Kennedy, I guess it was an opening day in Washington, and Rivera gave him a ball and wanted Kennedy to autograph the ball, and Kennedy just kind of scribbled his name, and Rivera looked at it, and I don't know if he handed the ball back and said something about, like, you call that a signature, come on, you can do better than that, John, something like that to the
president. I didn't know that.
I read that, but...
I could well believe it.
This kind of guy he is, huh?
Yeah.
Tell me about Nellie Fox.
Nellie was a self-made second baseman. Nellie couldn't run any faster than anybody, you know. He couldn't, his arm wasn't great. He couldn't hit a ball very hard. He just splattered the ball around. It wasn't anything that you could point to that he would be so much better than any other player. But he always there, he always made the plays, and he was he'd get on base, things like that. And that was his G4. He just made himself a baseball player. He was a self-made baseball player. Because I know when I was there, I'd hit the infield, and he'd have me every day, I think every day, practically every day. He'd catch anyway from 50 to 100 ground balls every day. Come out early or call the batting practice. He'd want me to hit the balls to him and hit them each, you know, he'd say, hit them this side and hit them, you know, motion where he wanted me to hit them. And he worked every day. And that Aparicio did the same thing. There's two of them and their work habit was great. And that's why Nellie made himself a great ball player. And I'm really sorry that he did not get enough votes to get into the Hall of Fame. Just missed it by a fraction of a vote or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. He was in 7 or 8 All-Star games, All-Star teams. I don't know why. And there was fellows in there, I think, it's probably because his statistics didn't measure up as high as some of the rest of them, maybe. But when it's all said and done, he was on winners.
Yeah.
You know, and he made the play, so. Sorry that he didn't get Hall of Fame.
What kind of a pitcher was Herb Score when he finally got to the White Sox?
When we got over there, truthfully, I felt so sorry for him because he came to the White Sox after he'd gotten hit. And he never could regain his skills. He never did throw as hard even. You'd get on the sideline, in the bullpen sideline when he was working on something. And he would throw pretty hard. But somehow or other, when he got in the ball game, and he threw the ball towards the hitter, he did something, I don't know if he tensed up, I don't know what happened, but he just wasn't the pitcher that he was over there. But he was, before he got hit, I thought he's going to be the great, great pitcher. I don't think he had. It was really a shame that he got hit like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I read somewhere, I don't know if Herb said this or somebody else said it about him, but before he was hit, just the way that he naturally threw the ball, that when he got rid of the ball, he was really out of position and off balance for anything that might have been hit back at him.
Yeah.
And, of course, then McDougal hit him, and he missed the rest of that year. And then in 58, when he tried to come back, there was nothing wrong with his arm at that point, but they said somehow subconsciously that his motion changed,
mm-hmm.
probably all in his head to try to somehow get that hand in position, one hand anyway, to protect himself should the same thing happen again, and that changed his motion, and then that brought his arm miseries on him.
I think that's right, because I think Lopez had a chance to get him, because Lopez was his manager over there. And he said Lopez thought he could get him and thought he could change him back to where he was, you know, get him to throw the same motion, but he never did. Al worked with him. He just didn't come back.
Like, maybe that's why you're talking about on the sidelines when he knew there was nobody going to hit the ball back at him, he could go back to the way he was.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. How about, do you remember another guy that I'd like to, I think I have an interview scheduled with anyway, was outfielder by name of Al Smith.
Oh, Al Smith,
Do you remember Al Smith Knight? Do you remember the night that they had for him? And Beck had a night for him
in Chicago.
They allowed anybody with the last name of Smith in for
that's
free.
Right. Yeah, anybody with the name of Smith was in free.
And he wound up hitting in a couple of double plays and he dropped the fly ball.
That's right. I think, I forget how many, they was in the thousands, Smith.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing you remember about Al Smith, in the All-Star, I mean in the World Series in 59, he backed up to catch a ball in left field, and somebody dropped a whole can of beer right on his head. I still see that picture. He coming in, it's beer. This that when you said Al Smith, I thought that's the first thing I thought of. Yeah, I remember that Al Smith and he made a double. That was it. Al was using it for. He's still in Chicago, I think.
Yeah, he still lives up there.
I think he's in the park. He worked for the Chicago Park Recreation or something.
You got me on that one, but I have his address and his phone number. But
well, that's probably not.
Talking about guys that whether or not they should be in the Hall of Fame, here's a guy that I think should be in the Hall of Fame. Is Minnie Minoso.
Yeah, Minnie has played as hard and worked as hard as anybody. Minnie, he could run. He could. And I don't know yet why he, I mean, simply because of his longevity, it should be in the Hall. Of course, the thing that they brought him back just for one game so he could play, said he could play in 5 decades or 6 decades, right, or whatever it was. Of course, I don't, you know, that's just what you want to do, that's fine. I think many just never did, I don't think many ever, how am I going to say this, ever reached his potential. I thought many could have been better than he was because he had all the, he could run, he could throw, but he just never did kind of put everything all together. You know what I mean? I don't think he ever really, he never was a great hitter, you know, but he never was a great fielder. You know, it's just something he didn't, he could catch balls, he could throw balls, he could hit. But he just never did put things together. I think
maybe just didn't stand out enough.
That just didn't stand out enough, I guess. I don't know. He's all right, too. I admire him for his. The fact that he works for Chicago White Sox, you know. Mm-hmm.
What kind of ball player was Kluszewski when he wound up with the White Sox there?
Kluszewski was still a good, he could still hit. But that was about it, you know. He could still hit. Well, it proved that he helped us in the win, you know, last 3 or 4 games during the season. And then they also hit 2 home runs the first game of the 1959 World Series, too. I think he hit 2 home runs that first game. We won the ball game by a big score. And then I think his, like anything else, I think his ability to wing down. I think if you get anybody with his build, you know, get strong, big, muscular, and when they get just a little edge off, then that works against them because they haven't got the agility, they haven't got the movement of the muscles and things like that. And I think that's happened to him. He still knows how to play. He can still teach, but he couldn't perform like he should.
There was a guy that wound up playing a little basketball after he got done playing baseball by the name of Dave DeBuscher.
Dave DeBuscher, yes, yes.
I was looking at his stats in 62 and 63. I think those were only 2 years he was with the White Sox. But in 62, I just wrote down little bits and pieces. 18 innings pitched, only gave up 5 hits in 18 innings, which is outstanding. Yeah. But I saw the reason why he walked 23 guys in 18 innings.
that was that, too. He could throw hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he could throw hard. But he never had, that was it, period. He never did master the curveball, the change, or anything else. I think one reason why, because he worked so hard trying to throw strikes that he couldn't, if he tried to work on something else, it would work against him. One little quick funny story about him. You know, he was in NBA and in 61 or 2, somewhere back in there. And so they signed him, and he was come to the White Sox. We waited. Back to back, they were in a playoff or something. And he didn't get to the White Sox camp until, you know, 3 or 4 days late. And so he said, oh, I'm in shape. I don't have to worry about, you know, I've been practicing up and down that court all the time. They put him out and run with the rest of the pitchers, you know, we'll start with, and about 10 minutes after that, they had to bring him in on a stretch. It's so much different running inside than running outside. He said, oh, I can do that. When he started out, he was really going to show. He died.
Had to carry him off.
Yeah. He'd like to die.
Was Moose Scowron with the White Sox when you
Yes. Yes, he was Scowron with the White Sox when I was there. He came over from Yankees. And he was a good ball player, yeah. But we were having trouble. We couldn't find the first baseman. And Moose filled in for us. He did a good job. He did all right. But we didn't win the pennant that year. I mean, I think we were fourth, third or fourth, something mm-hmm. like that. But he helped. Moose, he was a good ball player. He's all right. He's a good team man. You know, he wanted to win. He'd do things to win rather than play himself.
Mm-hmm. I know that my wife's first cousin married Moose's nephew, I believe, a kid by the name of Greg Scowron, and they live in Maryland. And hopefully, somehow, I can work this out. And one of these days, I'll sit down and talk with Moose.
I'll say one thing. If you get hold of Moose, he'll talk to you. Yeah. He's very.
You know something I just found out the other day, and I had no idea. I just assumed, naturally, that the reason they called Moose Scowron Moose was because he was a big guy. It turned out they called him Moose because I guess his nickname was Mussolini.
Oh, that did.
And I
didn't know that either.
I just read that. So
I was like you. I just thought he was putting his big chocolate.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know
Mussolini,
where. I don't know where they come up with that. But the last guy I wanted to ask you about was tell me your Bob Feller story.
Oh, well, that's another one with Warnicke and I. Warnicke, of course, was my roommate, like I've said before, and we were always talking, we were always agitating each other, and so Bob Feller had just signed with the Cleveland Indians. He was in spring training, and so one night before the games, Warnicke said to me, you know, I wonder if hard as Bob Feller thought, if he'd throw as hard as he could throw, and somebody would hit would swing bat hard as he could swing it, and he would hit the ball, how far that ball would go, because it would really go, you know. And so, of course, I was gullible enough, I didn't catch what he was leading up to. But he said, so he finally said, you know what? He said, tomorrow, spring training, he's going to pitch against us. You're the leadoff hitter. I was leadoff hitter for the next day. I was going to bat leadoff. He said, suppose that you swing as hard as you could swing, and Feller threw as hard as he could throw, and you would hit that ball, we could find out how far that ball would go. And I said, okay, I'll try that. So we talked about it. So next day, sure enough, Feller was pitching. I was the first hitter. Everything, the game was about to start. He was sitting over there, and he said, remember now, you really give it to him. So I said, okay. So sure enough, Feller wound up. And when he started throwing, I swung as hard as I could follow swing. I fell, and I swung so hard, I swung right off my feet, and I lit right on my butt. I did. I swung clear around and hit that thing. And I'll tell you one thing, that Warnicke like fell off it, and I looked back, and that Frisch was, he was really on me anyway. He looked at me, and I got back to that bench, and he eat me out. He said, what in the world are you trying to do? No, he just got on me somewhere. That Warnicke was always getting me in trouble. If I could hit that ball, it'd been all right. I could have found out, but I didn't hit it.
So you took three swings and...
Three swings, and I bounced back. That was it.